I'm going to read for us this morning from the prophet Habakkuk. The third chapter. Perhaps the book of Habakkuk is well known for chapter 2, verse 4, the just shall live by faith, which but today I want us to read in chapter 3, which is basically the song of the prophet Habakkuk. We read from verse 16 to the last verse. I heard and my inward parts trembled at the sound, my lips quivered. Decay enters my bones, and in my place I tremble, because I must wait quietly for the day of distress, for the people to arise who will invade us. Though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls, yet I will exult in the Lord, I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he has made my feet like hinds' feet, and makes me walk on my high places for the choir director on my stringed instruments. May the Lord bless the reading of the word, and the principal has already brought us to the Lord in prayer. Thank you for that. I like the prophet Habakkuk quite a lot because it's probably the way he has written his story or his prophecy. It's more like a dialogue between him and God. And it's easy to somehow follow what goes on in the book of the prophet Habakkuk. Because first of all, we see a man who is concerned about the decay in his society or his community, in his nation, just like us who are concerned today about the things that are happening in the political arena, or things that are happening, even issues of HIV and AIDS and whatever, the crime, the corruption that is there in our country these days. This is exactly what the prophet was concerned about. But contrary to what you and I would very often find ourselves doing when we are concerned about these things, the prophet is not just holding a talk over tea at tea time. This is not just a discussion that he holds with others, holding a sandwich of bread over tea time to talk about these issues. But the prophet takes the matters to God in prayer. Now, it's not wrong to talk about issues, but I guess it's better to be quiet if we cannot pray about matters and we just talk about them. Because I think it is not in talking that things will happen. It is also in praying. I believe that a genuine concern really should spark us or ignite a fire in us to seek the Lord in prayer. And this is what we see the prophet doing. He's concerned about this, and he even calls this a burden. His opening phrase says the burden of the prophet, of Habakkuk the prophet. So it is a burden in his heart. It's something that he carries about with him. It's something heavy upon his soul. even as he considers these matters that are so heavy, that are affecting him. But nonetheless, he takes the burden in line with what God would say to us, to cast our anxieties upon him, for he cares for us. He puts these anxieties to the Lord as a matter of prayer, and he prays about it. And then you hear God answering him, because in this case, just to be short on that, he was concerned about the fact that there was no justice, there was violence in the nation, and people, there was just a moral decay. And God answers him, he says, I am going to send judgment upon these people, I'm going to send the Babylonians, and they are going to crush this nation. And as he proclaims that, as he hears that message of judgment, he protests. He says, Lord, no, it can't be that way. How could you use the worst of the worst to punish the people who are more righteous than them? When you read chapter 1 of the book, and God responds later on by saying, yes, that their time as well is coming. The time of that nation that will be used against the Babylonians, they too will be judged by the Lord. Now, what we have seen here, it's like God is coming to the prophet who is struggling with issues, but the prophet needed a perspective, a broader perspective to look at the reality around him. You see, somehow, sometimes we look at things from just one vantage point, like when we are in this hall. If we didn't know much about this building, we just found ourselves inside this hall and we were asked to at least give a drawing of what this building looks like. No doubt many of us would just put in a square and say this building is just a square and it has a roof on top and it doesn't have any windows. And it has just four doors. We would say that because that's the only perspective we have. But the fact that we have been exposed to all the sides of this building, we can give a better description of what this building looks like. And this is the reality with when you are struggling with certain issues and you are just focusing on those issues and you don't have a bigger reality. But sometimes God allows us to step back of our of what we are experiencing at that particular time to see the bigger picture, to see where that particular aspect that you are dealing with fits in within God's broader vision and purpose. And then you begin to see that everything has its proper place within God's greater redemptive plan. And God gives this man his bigger plan here. And when things started to make sense in this way, that brings the prophet to a point where he can now have a settled conviction in his heart that really God is in charge in his life. Then he starts off with a song. He ends up with a song that I want us to look at in verse 17. Though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls. What do we have here? We have a picture of a world that has just crumbled all around the prophet Habakkuk. It's like nothing is working. Nothing seems to be hopeful. There's nothing really that's going to come out of this situation. He says, yet, verse 18, I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. In fact, in the Hebrew it says, I will jump with joy before the Lord. Now when you look at the picture in verse 17 and what he says in verse 18, there is quite a contrast. How can a person rejoice in the midst of adversity? How can a person rejoice when the whole world has come crumbling around him? This must be a supernatural kind of joy. This must be a joy that comes from elsewhere, that the prophet himself cannot generate out of himself. It must be a joy that is given to him. And this joy is given by the fact that the Lord has allowed the prophet to be able to see his situation in context. In the context of the character of God. The character of God. Look at what he says about the Lord here. He says, he is the God of my salvation, my strength. In other words, the prophet has been given the overall picture of the situation and how God deals with nations, and how nations are like pieces of a puzzle that God fits in together. And he has begun to see God's plan about the nations, how God is dealing with the nations, how God is dealing with his own nations, his own nation. And the fact of the matter also, how God is dealing with himself. And he, through all these things, he caught a red glimpse of the beauty of God, the character of God. And in that character, he could see that there is reason to trust this God. In spite of it all, even when nothing seems to be hopeful, no cattle in the stall, no fruit on the vines, no olive. You must remember these were staple diets of these people of God. Without the olives, the olive oil, they could not cook, they could not make their bread. They depended on cakes made of figs. They depended on cattle for milk, for meat, and the like. And so in the absence of all these things, and the fact that the fields do not produce no food, there is no wheat, there's nothing that they can harvest, there's nothing that they can gather. In other words, the prophet is painting a very bleak picture. The worst of the worst. Things cannot be more worse than what they appear to be in this picture. And yet the prophet, he says, I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation, my strength. And so basically what gives him grace here to stand is because God has allowed him to look at or to put his trust upon the character of God rather than the character of the situation. You know, it's very easy that when things go wrong in our lives, to think that okay, things are so bad in my life. That means God has forgotten me. Or that means God doesn't love me anymore. As if God goes into mood swings like human beings. That if he said yesterday he loves you, he can come today and say, oh, I don't know if I love you that much anymore. As if God is a human being, the son of man like us. And we never realize that if he said he loves me 2,000 years ago, he still remains in that state even today. And that love for me is not going to change on the basis of my performance. Yes, he will discipline me where he needs to discipline me. He will shape me up where he needs to shape me up. But his love for me, his love for you, is not going to change on the basis of our own performances. And this is what the prophet discovered in his life, in his dealing with God. That is, dealing with God who is as firm as anything firm can be, who does not change, who does not waver, who does not mutate, if I may use that word, but God who is very firm, and God who can be trusted, who can be relied upon. I guess what God said to the prophet in chapter 2, verse 4, was sort of coming back to him, as it were, like a shadow that continues to haunt him. Maybe it's not a good word. The very same words that said, "The just shall live by faith." So the prophet expresses faith in the living God here. And that faith is so strong that it is able to withstand even the worst of adversities that may come upon his life. And that faith is later on expressed in Romans chapter 1, verse 17, where the apostle Paul talks about, quotes a verse, chapter 2, verse 4 of Habakkuk, to mention the fact that God was actually the just shall live by faith in the context of saying of the gospel, revealing the righteousness of God. And you cannot really divorce this fact of God's being the God of my salvation, as stated by Habakkuk here, from the fact of the righteous shall live by faith. Because in that, you cannot talk of salvation without faith, and you cannot talk of faith where there is no salvation. And the prophet here tells us that what gives him perspective is the fact that the Lord has given him the light of his redemptive plan. Now, one thing that I want us to look at here is what he says in verse 19. He says, "The Lord is my strength, and he has made my feet like hinds' feet, and makes me walk on my high places." The Lord is my strength, he has made my feet like hinds' feet. He talks of a deer here, an animal that is able to tread with tiny feet on mountain sides among the rocks and be able to survive there, be able to run there. And the prophet looks at God and he says, this God is able to sustain me even in times of adversity. So basically, when I'm in times of difficulties, trials and testings, I can rest assured that no, I am not alone. I am safe in his hands, I'm safe in his arms, and God will keep me strong even in times of adversity. He will make me to walk in high places. I like the fact that he says he will make me to walk. He makes me walk on my high places. Whereas I would expect that God would remove the high places and make me to walk in smooth path, in places where I'm comfortable, in places where I'm allowed to choose where I would like to walk. But the prophet's confidence is in the fact that God, despite the fact that he still has mountains, he still has high places that he has to walk in, God gives him that grace to walk in those high places. This is an expression of faith from someone who has seen the big picture. When I was reading the Shorter Catechism, it defined faith in this way. It says, faith in Jesus Christ is a saving grace, whereby we receive and rest upon Him alone for salvation as He is offered to us in the Gospel. Now, the question that may come to your mind is this the Gospel? We don't see Gospel here. We see judgment. I believe that the Gospel mingles judgment and salvation together. We cannot talk of the Gospel if we exclude judgment. And we cannot talk of, if we talk of the Gospel in the absence of judgment, then we talk of we are simplifying the reality of the Gospel. Because what the Gospel gives you a bitter taste before it gives you a sweet taste. It gives you the taste of God's judgment, the fact that man has sinned, the fact that man has offended his Creator, and the fact that God requires judgment upon man on the basis of his sins and on the basis of the requirements of his law. Those are bitter news. Those are sad news. But they are part of the good news, because we can never appreciate what God is doing to us or for us through the death, the resurrection of Jesus Christ if we have not tasted the bad news. Why would I need the good news if there are no bad news? I need the good news because there are bad news. I need a message that says there's hope for me because I live in a desperate situation, in a need, in the face of God's judgment. And therefore, the Gospel must give me the bitter taste as well as the sweet taste. In the book of Habakkuk, how does the Gospel come about? The Gospel comes about in the fact that God, who judges, also provides salvation to those who come to Him by faith. It is very clear. The just shall live by faith. This is the God of our salvation. This is a God who is dependable, who is our strength, the God that we can put our trust in. And this is the God who declares men just in the sight of the law, and who acquits them from punishment and admits them to His favor. And when we see our situation in the light of that, when we look at ourselves, our circumstances, whether it's in our community or in our own personal lives or the families, if we can look at that from that perspective and realize that the hand of God is at work here. I'm not just a crawling worm. I'm not helpless by the roadside. My life fits in within God's plan. And despite everything I may be struggling with, or you may be struggling with, if you can see things from this perspective and say, God is in charge here, then perhaps you may find a reason to jump up and down like Habakkuk and rejoice in the God of our salvation. And I hope I can rejoice as well in the God of my salvation. And this is the gospel that gives us a reason to even rejoice when the world around us crumbles, because we have learned to look at life in the light of God's redemptive plan.